Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
The business world is changing fast and the old rules don't seem to apply anymore. But this pressure makes diamonds, and who knows that pressure well? Mike Suter. He went from editing smash hits at just 23 to shortlisting, to launching Shortlist and Stylist, building Shortlist Media from a five-person startup into a business that later employed 180 people and sold for a multi-million pound sum. He's now one of Lord Sugar's trusted advisors on The Apprentice, and his new book, Next Gen CEO, is pitched as a playbook for anybody trying to lead, adapt and survive the five big storms that all face business today. Mike Suter, you're very welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me on. This is an absolute pleasure.
Now, you're a Scot, which is very evident by your voice. Tell us a little bit about you and indeed your early days, Mike. You're an interesting character.
Oh, well, listen, thank you for your interest. Yeah, I am Scottish. I now live in a little village just outside London. But I started my career when I was 17 years old in a publishing company in Dundee called DC Thompson. And my very first job there was on a romantic fiction magazine for elderly ladies. And I wrote the horoscopes. So apologies to any of your listeners who may have accidentally followed my advice, but I was a school leaver and I didn't know any better. But if you think I was unqualified for that role, then wait until you hear what I did next, because after 3 months, I did such a good job of acting as Rosella, that was my pen name, that they promoted me to being the beauty editor. Now, remember here, I'm 17 years old. I still have acne at this point. And I mean, I'm hardly even using soap, never mind cosmetics. So so I think, you know, after another few months of that, I think they saw sense and made me the pop editor of a teenage magazine instead. And that was really where my career started. It all went off from there.
Yeah. And you built a fine business around magazines and media, Mike, and it's interesting that, you know, you saw amazing change in that industry that was almost surpassed overnight by the internet, by YouTube and all these things, and you saw a business, yes, maybe that was slow to change, did you?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And what's interesting is these things tend to happen slowly, and then really quickly. So a new form of technology comes along. So in my case, you know, working in print magazines, the internet came along. Everybody immediately thinks this is going to change everything. Then it doesn't change everything overnight. Things kind of carry on, but decline slowly. And then all of a sudden, it reaches a tipping point and things just collapse. And I think, for example, I think we're going to see something very similar with AI.
Okay.
You know, everybody's very aware of AI. People are using it in their daily lives. People are using it in their careers. But there's still, it hasn't changed an awful lot. It's like a new tool at the moment. My strong suspicion is that in just a few years' time, we will see artificial intelligence have a much, much bigger kind of societal change. But you know, returning to your point, I worked in magazines as an editor and as a publisher and a managing director for many years. I was on the board of Britain's biggest magazine publisher, IPC, for about 6 years. And I really saw the shift there. I could really feel the ground moving underneath our feet. And it's why I left to set up a business, which was Shortlist Media, where we published free, high quality, high frequency weekly magazines, which didn't need the news agents anymore.
Yeah.
And that was the thing that I perceived as being the weakest point in the chain. And that's what happens when things change. You look at supply chains, you look at value chains, and you figure out what is going to become redundant in this. I and my co-founders recognized that news agents were the weak link in the chain, that people weren't going into news agents so much anymore. You know, they weren't buying cigarettes anymore. Nobody smokes. They weren't buying newspapers anymore. Who reads a newspaper? And actually, that meant that magazines were going to suffer. So we provided a whole new, we innovated and we provided a whole new distribution process for people to get magazines, and it was transformative for the magazine market, and yeah, very profitable for us.
And even though now that probably has gone full circle as well, in that those free publications, you never seem to see them anymore.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing, isn't it? I think, you know, you in a fast changing world, something that is super profitable today, you've got to see what the risks are for that, and you've got to find ways to pivot out of that. Because, you know, you might have a business. Let's just say anybody who might have a business, and they recognize that their normal revenue lines, you know, you might have a bakery, for example, and maybe you look at your stats and 5 years ago you were selling 200 loaves a day, but now actually you're down to only selling 100 loaves per day. What's happening? You seem to still have as many customers. You might decide at that point that you're going to pivot into ready-made food. So yes, you're going to bake the bread and the rolls and everything else, but actually what you're going to start to do is invest in the capabilities to do hot foods. You're going to start to sell other things alongside it. You're going to start to make sandwiches with your amazing artisanal bread. You can still lean into your core skill, but at the same time, you can optimize and manage that in a much smarter way. And that's the same thing with lots of magazine brands. There are still really successful, really profitable magazine brands. It's just they don't really make their money anymore.
Yeah, they've morphed into something else.
On paper.
Yeah, exactly
that.
You talk about the five storms facing businesses in your new book, Next Gen CEO. We already talked about AI. Talk to me about the other four, if you would.
I mean, let me focus in on two other ones in particular, because I think they're probably the biggest. One of them is geopolitical upheaval. You know, what we're, without getting, you know, kind of too serious or gloomy in this call, clearly there is great uncertainty in the world. Old alliances that have existed, that trade routes sit on the back of, have very much either been totally disrupted or have disappeared. There are conflicts that are happening in the world, real armed conflicts that have terrible, terrible impacts on real people, but also have significant impacts on businesses. I mean, I am speaking to business leaders who just 3 or 4 years ago would never have questioned their supply chain because they get their products made in China and they are pushed through this way. And, you know, fuel costs have been the same for years and years and years. Maybe we might budget for them to go up by a couple of percent this year. But, you know, you're working with a fairly steady state of assumptions. Global geopolitical upheaval has changed all of those. It's incredibly difficult now to predict with any great certainty what's going to happen over the next, you know, over the next year, never mind over the next 3 to 5 years, which is where you need to be thinking if you are running a business, if you're a leader.
And sorry to cut across you, Mike, but it is one of the frustrations around that is that geopolitical stuff is largely out of control, out of the control or influence of business.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You suffer from the consequences of that, and there is very little that you can do. But what you can do is you can scenario plan. What you can do is you can look to different partnerships. What you can do is think about where you source different partnerships and relationships and products from. Anybody who remains reliant either on, you know, a one or two sources of product or manufacturing, or even one or two sources of marketing. You know, many smart businesses over the last 5 years have really thrown their lot in with social media, for example. Do you know what I mean? Social media is something that will, if you get it right, drive lots and lots and lots of customers and sales. But actually, again, you're not in control of that. You are on somebody else's platform. So becoming less reliant on big organizations or big global themes that you don't control. If you can become less reliant on those, if you can have contingency plans, then that obviously is a sensible thing to do.
More revenue streams in more markets. Sounds great, but that's often easier said than done.
Yeah, but you know, yes. I think one of the great digital opportunities that we have open to us now that simply didn't exist for companies even 10 years ago is the ability to have a direct dialogue with every single customer that you have on an individual basis.
Yeah.
We are now able to do that. You don't need to build a massive shop and have it in the middle of an expensive high street and pay massive rates in order to be a big business. You look at something like Gymshark, for example, you know, built by, you know, when he was 19, Ben Francis, and, you know, extraordinary success, built not on bricks and mortar, but built on a brand and built on an understanding of an audience and built on a real love of, you know, creating things that met their needs, you know. Yeah. So there are, you know, with every one of these downsides, and there definitely are downsides, if you think hard enough and you are open enough to experimentation, then you can always pioneer and always find new ways. And then to talk about those storms of change, the final one that I think is really impactful is a new generation of workforce coming through. We're seeing people coming into the workforce who bore the brunt of COVID and kind of, you know, isolation during a really important time in their upbringing and their development as people. They are also suffering from the fact that the cost of living, because of the first two storms of change, has risen so much that, you know, there used to be a contract. You know, when I entered the workplace, even entering the workplace, you know, 15 years ago, there was a sense that if you worked hard and you were committed and you were loyal, then the reward for that would be that your employer would supply you with enough means to be able to, you know, put down some money on a mortgage, possibly have your own home one day, be able to buy a car, start a family, you know, go on a holiday, maybe two holidays every year if you kind of saved. The cost of living crisis means that so many of those things that I think we all took for granted that were motivators, that were things that kept people focused on their job, that they don't exist anymore. The distance between where you are right now when coming into the workforce and you know, and those kind of simple basic expectations of what happens when you're successful, they're much further apart. So younger people coming into the workplace are just not as connected and sure, as engaged. And if you're a leader, you have to find smart ways to re-engage them.
Yeah, and as I said to someone last week, Mike, that I'm glad I'm on the way down rather than on the way up.
There's life in the old dog yet.
That's
come
it.
On.
All right, listen, great to talk to you. That's Mike Suter there. He's the author of Next Generation CEO. Great to talk to you, Mike, and thanks for joining us.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.